of what I know organizing work to be, is to make connections where otherwise they would not be seen, or they otherwise would not have the opportunity to come to light, so that conversations that need to be had can be had, so that people can work toward a common goal, right? So it's not a new concept, but I think that I do think that we're going to need to rely on that sort of strategic way of thinking and doing things. That's really kind of how I've seen it playing out through the pandemic, and that's how I see it. Kind of like I see where it's going with that, like really needing to rely on that. And I think too, like there have been so many people that have been like the Knapp Ministry and Adrian Marie Brown and Prentice Hemphill, who have also done the really important work within all of those complex crises to do the work of saying, yeah, and rest, yeah, and joy, yeah, and pleasure. Because that is equally as important, especially because it's hard work. You know, the work is not easy work. It can be joyful. It can be pleasurable. And in some ways, too, it can be restorative. I think that it does take some imagining, though, of how we do things, how we can do things differently. I'm a board member at a nonprofit here. It's called Crime Victim Services. And I'll admit, I have some, you know, I have some opinions about the word crime. And, but, you know, I very do much understand the people that we work with and serve are victims of violence and trauma, and they're survivors. And we're at a place now where we are transitioning leadership, and we have big, big questions and big, big visions on the table. And we're in a process of looking how everything, all of the work that we do and all of the people that we work with intersect. And so I see it even in the organization that I'm a part of, like the hard conversations that need to be had while also remembering that we're human beings and that we need to just keep our relationships in mind and work from a place of reciprocity and work from a place of, again, I think it's about softness too. And not needing to think that we're right all the time. But yeah, I see relationship being integral and intersectionality being integral, and knowing that we are, you know, interdependent. That's also a concept that's really important in Chinese medicine and East Asian medicine, is that interdependence. You know, we are talking about the lungs and the kidneys. You know, our bodily systems work in tandem with each other. They work in pairs. One system's work is not more important than the others. And so, and there's that, you know, there's that kind of relationship too. And I hope that's kind of like where we're moving into as we tackle these crises. Yeah.
What have been some of your sources of joy and pleasure over the last couple of years?
Gardening has been really helpful. It's been really, really helpful. Just spending time outside is always very restorative. And when for example, my little one will just, you know, wake up in the morning randomly on random days and say, I want to paint. And just like leaning into that all the way, like, okay, let's just paint. And then just letting the creativity flow. That has been really, really, really helpful. You know, just being inspired in that way by somebody who is you know, learning the world, but still relatively new to the world. And just the way that he trusts, like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing now. You know, like, I'm going to paint because it's going to be awesome, you know. And just having that urge to follow that, I think, you know, and trusting that. So part of it, I think, is trusting the joy and trusting the pleasure, knowing what brings me joy and what brings me pleasure, really, really thinking through that. And being honest about it, you know, not trying to pretend like this thing brings me joy while this thing doesn't. And a lot of that for me has been about, in terms of career, has been about, you know, the question of getting a doctoral degree, or do I go this other route that's a bit more creative and might be actually more joyful, still within the realm of Chinese medicine, but would bring in all of these things that I've learned in my life that could, as a way to kind of culminate everything together. Do I go with that, or do I go with what I thought I wanted, which is that title, you know? And not to say they're mutually exclusive, but, you know, they're not exclusive, but, you know, sometimes you have to prioritize and you have to say no to something that you really want to do. I think that's a part of it too for me in terms of joy and pleasure, is like saying, you know, I really want to do that, but timing's not right. So I'm just going to like say no. And like just to kind of like feel how my body feels with that is really nice. Because it does feel like an exhale. Yeah. So other things that have been bringing me joy, especially recently, is exercise. And just going all in for it, like, okay, I have these goals and this is what I'm going for, and getting up early to do it and really changing some of my habits, certainly food wise, but also just like things that I did habitually that I was just doing because it was a habit, changing that up entirely. Exercise has really been, really been helpful. Also, like the mental, like I have so much more, I find myself in this process now because I have been exercising and chi is moving better. A part of the reason why I started the process is because I was having some health issues and I have a family history of digestive disorders. And so I was like, I have to get my blood work and I have to make some changes and follow it up with, you know, additional imaging and labs from a traditional doctor. So, but the exercise has been integral. And I also realize, like every time I do it, I feel like it's a little bit like a practice of resistance in a way, or reclaiming in a way, where the body that was shamed, or the person that was shamed when I was young, that when I exercise and I move my body in a way that people may have told me that I couldn't or that I shouldn't, even maybe even now, I feel like I reclaim a little bit of my own power back. Also, because my ancestors' bodies for many years were not necessarily their own. Reclaiming that too when I exercise, like this is my body and I get one body and I get to make this decision to move my body and to clear my mind. So I say all that because I've found that I'm going through this process right now where there's so much space being made that I'm finding like new ideas coming in. So I have to like, you know, I kind of have to like say, okay, let's start to organize a little bit, or just kind of like give yourself some space to give yourself space that has been made to kind of dream a little bit. You know, that's what happens, I think, when the chi is flowing, is that it flows and you kind of sweep things out and things can come in that weren't able to come in, and things are let go of that you weren't able to let go of before. And there's more of a flow overall. And so That flow in particular, that's like my word for the year, that just focusing on that and participating in it in those various ways have brought a lot of joy and pleasure. And, you know, like kind of like, oh, okay, that's cool. I didn't know I felt that way about that, you know, allowing space for curiosity and as well is helpful. Yeah.
I'm curious, what does the word health mean to you?
Health, yeah. Health to me means it does really go back again to I guess vitality, and within that, knowing that it's dynamic, and it can change, and it can transform, and it's not stagnant, and I think then to really hone in, I would say that health is about embracing the both and. It's about embracing that there are many things that are true all at the same time. And there's a vitality, I think, to that too, to know that the world operates in a dynamic fashion, where things change often. Health is not a destination. It's not like you get there and then you're there and you stay there. I don't think a healthy community is like that, or a healthy ecosystem, or a healthy person individually. There's always change happening. And we influence that change through our thinking and our actions and our words. So I would say that health is a state of dynamic. Certainly I'm leaning toward a textbook description of dynamic equilibrium, right? But, you know, it is a dynamicism, I think. And I think it's a transformation. I think we're always sort of becoming health, or we have a vision of becoming more healthy or sustaining health. And I think it's always in motion. I don't know if that's concrete enough, but that's how I think. And even in my thinking, when I think about it, I'm like, that's not like this. That's not very linear, but it doesn't feel linear. It feels like a big circle. It just feels like a big circle. And I'm okay with that, I think. I'm okay with that, you know. Yeah.
What does the word safety mean to you?
Safety. The word safety to me means feeling that, in part, I think it's feeling that you, a feeling of being resourced. Like you are enough, you have enough. And also that where you are is also enough, like where you are in your life. The place that you actually live is enough. Safety, I think, also is about feeling that you will be held, or you will be, somebody's looking out for you. Somebody has you in mind, and trusting that. I think of safety too is connected to like what's the most benevolent outcome for everybody, if that's possible to achieve, but or at least having that ideology of people being taken care of. So I think safety is about, Robin Wall Kimmerer says this, but you know, like knowing, like really, really trusting that the earth loves you back. If you love the earth loves you back, right? If it's true that you love the earth, the earth loves you back. And I think that's complicated when we talk about human dynamics and relationships, right? But I think if one can feel safe in knowing that they are loved and that they are, again, being thought of and considered, I think that, for me, embodies a feeling of safety. Self-loving myself is an embodiment of feeling safe in my own home and then out in the home of the world. Safety, I think, is also in then, of course, as people are being considered and thought of and looked after, that means that kind of like ravels or kind of unfurls or whatever you want to say into people having what they need and shaping worlds around those principles, shaping structure around those principles or that principle of people having what they need, and people feeling safe and people feeling cared for, shaping system around care and really sort of safety and care go hand in hand. And so we need to, I guess, understand what those two things really mean to us, I think, as humans, which is a very large undertaking, but I mean, you know, it happens one person at a time, one community at a time. And so having those kind of conversations, I think, play into what safety means. And I think so that's what safety means for me. And I think safety can look and sound like something different for us, somebody else or another community. Safety for somebody else very concretely might mean like, I don't have to lock my front door or something, or safety could mean like, I don't feel like I need to carry this knife with me to this location anymore. Safety could feel like, I don't feel like my doctor is going to misgender me or say the wrong pronouns to me. So I think finding out what that looks like to people is a part of the work too. Yeah. May I ask, can I take a small break?
For sure. Thank you so much for asking.
Yeah, okay.
Do you want me to hit stop on the recording and then restart, or just like leave it running for a moment?
Yeah, let's, if we can stop it for a moment.
Yeah.
Thank you.
How are you feeling about the immediate future?
The immediate future? I'll be honest, I feel a lot of unknowns, but they're not the kind of unknowns that I've felt at other times in my life, and not the kind of unknowns that I think myself personally, but many of us felt during the height of the pandemic or the start and the height of the pandemic. I do feel a lot of unknowns just because so many things have changed and shifted in my thinking. So I'm really trying to, I guess I'm asking myself the question of like, what kind of ancestor do I want to be? You know, what kind of legacy do I want to leave? I'm asking myself that. And I think that in and of itself, that question has an answer. And I know it in part. What I'm now doing is really kind of like, okay, how do I work not we're kind of work backwards in a way. So how do I, what do I need to put into place to make that true? And so some of that is more personal spiritual work, and some of it is very much so just in terms of my career. I see travel in my immediate future, just to visit some family, that I haven't seen in a while, and family I've not met, on my father's side, who I didn't know I had. So I see that really opening up, which is exciting. But again, it's really unknown, you know. And I feel some, like, just being curious and staying with that and allowing that to kind of guide me a bit, allowing curiosity and creativity to really move me through not knowing and to trust that I am resourced. You know, we had talked about that being really important for me in terms of my own feeling of safety. Really knowing that I am resourced and trying to allow that truth to let some of that intergenerational trauma surrounding scarcity to kind of melt away. 'Cause that is something that I'm always working on. So, I'm trying to think. I do also see for, like, more, I guess, collectively, like, that I keep going back to the Adrienne Marie Brown quote, and she may have gotten it from somebody else, but the small is all. Like, I'm like, I keep going back to that, like, small is all. I think we'll find a lot of expansiveness in more local and hyper-local engagements. I think that'll help create different kind of solutions that we haven't thought of more collectively as well as for ourselves individually. So I do see that, and I'm kind of looking forward to that as well, and seeing what that will look like seeing what that would, what does it mean if we, like, have all the food we need in our little community, you know, and don't have to, you know, rely on importing as much even. For myself personally, though, I see the travel in a sense of, like, literal travel, but also, like, traveling into, you know, letting my mind kind of expand on things. And
what are some of your hopes for a longer term future?
Hopes. Ooh. Mm-hmm. Such good questions. This one feels, I have to go back to Miriam Kaba. just who is genius and generous and also just a really wonderful person. Hope is a discipline, which I know that she has also given credit to that being a part of a larger conversation that she had with somebody during a meeting. I believe it was at a church. She's written about it before. Hope is a discipline, that phrase I think about a lot. And so I think it, if you ask the question of what am I hopeful for, I have to go back to what is being practiced, like, what is the praxis that we are engaging in how we go about imagining a different reality than what we have. In sustaining what works. and I'm also thinking about the idea that I heard from, her first name is Ayana Johnson is her name. but she's a marine biologist, and I believe she co-wrote the book All We Can Save. I think I'm not mistaken about that. Hopefully not. But she did a talk with On Being. So I love that podcast. So I was listening to that. And she has this idea that she's working with about what if we get it right. So I think about that too. Like, hope is a practice. We have to practice what we hope for. And what if we get it right in that process? And it, no matter what the outcome is, like whether or not we can save, right? Maybe not being as attached to that as much as the process with which we work within. And then maybe trusting that that is enough, and trusting that the more that we do that and the more that we help people engage with that, the wider it goes, you know, the deeper it goes, the wider it goes. And what if that is enough? And what if that is what we get right? You know, I think for Chinese medicine, I specifically have a very clear hope in that we stop using the term Oriental in our language and in our accrediting bodies and things like that. Like, there has been a big campaign that Influential Point, which is an organization, they were very steadfast in trying to campaign against that term. But it's still being used. Some schools have listened and have changed their name. A lot of it is based in fear and the unknown of not knowing what will happen if it's changed. So I would love to see that changed. I would love to see more people of color, BIPOC folks, especially Asian relatives, leading that field in the U.S. at least. I know it's different for other countries. Although in Western countries, it's similar to the U.S. It's not often led by people of color in terms of the who's teaching, right? For instance, that's a very clear example. I would like to see more folks, BIPOC, Asian relatives, teaching within the field, and also really setting whatever standard we decide is the right one, sort of like relooking at that. Because it is a point of contention. So having those really hard conversations, I think, is important. And I would like to see that change in the field that I'm in. And then, yeah, again, kind of collectively, like, really understanding what it is we hope for and making it true through our actions day by day. And maybe even a little bit of trusting that, you know, that we can get it right, that we can move towards something and not see the end of it in our lifetime. And that being okay, you know, and like letting go of that, whatever the outcome looks like, but knowing that we're doing what we need to do in the meantime. It's kind of almost like that saying, or it's kind of almost just like a sigh of relief, I guess, to just, okay, like I know my part, and I trust that others will after me see this through. Yeah.
Who are some of the people who have been supportive of you during the pandemic?
Mm-hmm. I certainly my family and friends and colleagues. Yeah, I think that and interestingly, this might sound strange, but I'll the people who have passed away, I still feel their support. My father, my aunt, I had a cousin who passed away. I had two friends when I was in college. I had the opportunity to travel to Mali in West Africa, and I had two friends pass away there of COVID. More recently, like 2 weeks ago, I had a friend from college pass away. Aunts pass away, you know, but I still feel like they have been supportive in a lot of ways, just either things that I remember about them or things that they said before they passed. And I honestly, I know it sounds, I mean, it might sound very strange, but I feel a lot of support from those people. Like, you asked me the question, I'm like, yeah, it's kind of strange, but I do feel like this, this great solidity with, in having, just, having shared time on this planet with them. Of course the people who are living have been immensely supportive of as well. But I do feel a lot of support from those who have passed. And I think what they, what they've taught me about, what to hold on to, I guess. And we talk a lot about what we need to let go of, like, oh, you need to let go of this. You need to, you need to let go of that. But it's like, okay, what are we holding on to then? You know, what are we really holding on to? And I think I find that very supportive to think about as a sort of paradigm or a thinking shift. You know, I certainly have been on the, I need to let this go. I need to, you know, but then reframing the question of what are we holding on? What am I holding on to is really important too. And I do feel like that in of itself is a supportive shift in thinking too. Yeah.
What are some of the ways that you've been taking care of yourself?
Massages. I started that recently. I work sort of in the realm of embodiment. I work with the body, also with the mind, but they certainly go hand in hand, but I wasn't receiving enough myself. I realized that. So I started to do that. I'd say that's probably been one of the more pivotal things. It hasn't even been that long, but it's really, I forgot how helpful and supportive it is to have someone work with your body, your flesh, in a therapeutic way. You know, I mean, I'm talking very literal here, but it's true, you know, to have somebody really have that kind of attention, you know, on you is really, really helpful. And the therapeutic value is just, it's priceless, you know. And the creativity piece too, like, just like kind of letting myself explore that. Cause I have been really restrained in the past with that, you know. I started off in a creative field and then, you know, because of my own doing as well as from others, was deterred and, you know, still stayed within that realm a bit, but then just not really fully engaging, I think, the immenseness of my own creativity. That's something I'm trying to do more. And so that is a practice that I'm trying to really just when I feel that sense of like, but you shouldn't, or, but it won't turn out great, or, but, you know, then I just try to just listen and say, but what if I get it, you know, what if I get it right? You know, what if it's horrible? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. What matters is that you practice, you know, what matters is that you just keep trying something, you know, keep engaging, which is very much a muscle, I think, you know. Yeah.
I'm coming to the end of my questions, and the last mm-hmm. few are a bit odd. The first is, what should we in the social sciences and the humanities be doing right now to help us understand the human side of COVID-19?
Can you say your question one more time?
For those of us who are scholars in the society, in the social sciences and the humanities, so like literature departments and sociology and poli-sci, what should we be doing so that we can help us understand this moment that we're living through?
Mm-hmm. I think this project is really wonderful, and I've seen projects kind of blooming that are just in a similar vein, where they're really like listening projects, oral history projects. And I've participated in a few myself as an undergrad as a research and the research side of it. Just being in that space in and of itself of listening, I think is so needed. And of allowing people to share their story, in a way, I think writing is essential. And I also think just the human voice is really important too. So I think I would say keep doing what you're doing. You know, I would say open up opportunities for listening, collaborate in different ways that maybe you haven't thought of for listening. One project in particular that I'm thinking of is with the United Plant Savers, and they're doing sort of like an oral storytelling or history project with farmers and farmers who have varying levels of experience and who are at various stages in their life. And I, you know, again, I think that's such a wonderful thing to do. So I really feel like that will also be, I hope, something that we see more often. And again, in new ways, like inviting more people to that table. Certainly to tell the story, but also to maybe even frame how to structure the process of holding space for people to share their stories. I think too could, there's a lot to learn there.
Would you tell me something about the kinds of histories you'd wish you'd learned more about when you were younger?
Mm-hmm. I'd have to start with my own. I know some, but I wish there was more oral history within my family. You know, I think a part of it too is asking the questions that want to be asked. And so I think a part of it too is if you come from a generation where scarcity is the mentality, and I think that applies not only to what resources you're being scarce, but you have that attitude toward like food, shelter, clothing, but it also can speak to or apply to a scarcity of sharing one's history, for fear of it running out or for fear of it being stolen or for, you know, various other reasons. I think that's a history that I wish that I would have grown up hearing more. I think another history that I would have liked to know the actual truth of was certainly Indigenous history and certainly history of the transatlantic slave trade. Those to me are woven into my own personal story, and also about how those, like, how nuanced those relationships were between also Irish folks and other Europeans that they were enslaved here in this country, and Native folks and Black folks, like those kind of relationships, like what was the, how did that flow? You know, what were those dynamics like? I think that's very finite, but I would have loved to learn that, because that is, all of those people are part of my personal history and family, and ancestry. I think another history that I would have really, I don't know if it's general, but it's coming to mind, but I guess a history of, what I'll just loosely call as activism, which could involve, movements of resistance, revolt, revolution, all the R's, right? reciprocity and how that plays into activism, relationship, you know, what kind of communities were working with each other toward a more common good. That's a history that I really wish that I would have learned early on. Yeah.
Thinking of a historian watching this in the future, someone far enough away that they have no lived experience of this moment, what would you ask them that as they go forth with this, like, raw idea of, I'm going to write something about COVID-19, what would you tell them needs to be remembered about this moment as they go forth with this project?
Yeah. Something is forming. Give me just a minute. I would ask them to keep in mind, I would ask them to remember as they work on their project that I would tell them to look in all directions. So I would tell them to look at where the wind came in, how it swept in, how the pandemic came in. I would tell them to look at what influences were impacting the very real reality, or the very clear reality of a virus and the work that it was doing, the work that the virus was doing. I would tell them to look in all directions and have an intersectional approach to their project, to look in all directions, yeah. And let that inform the story that unfolds, or the history that unfolds. Yeah.
I want to thank you so much for the generosity of your time and the kindness and beauty of your answers. Those are all of the questions I know how to ask at this moment, but if there's anything you'd like to share that I haven't made room for, please take some space to do so.
Thank you so much, Kit. I really appreciate you asking me to be a part of this project. And it actually is coming at a very, again, auspicious time when I'm just doing a lot of reflection anyway. And so I am thankful to whatever guides helped me answer these questions. I'm thankful to whatever guides helped you ask the questions. And I'm thankful to whomever might be listening to this, at whatever point in history it happens. And I just am thankful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.